welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And hello, it's going to be a fun day today. Tara Morgan, welcome to Inspired Island, Tara.
Hey, Grace, how's it going?
We're really excited to chat with you. You've got a lot going on. And if you're a regular Voice of Vashon listener, you might already know Tara from the shows that she's been a co-host or host of, including New Kids on the Rock, which has a great name and a great show, or the Dear Vashon episodes of The Morning Scramble. And Tara is quickly becoming well-known around the island more for her work as a barber, and more specifically, a traveling barber who keeps islanders looking spiffy during the pandemic. And her business, Come On Barber, has been featured by NPR's Marketplace and King 5's Evening Show. And the traveling and pop-up nature of the business means that Tara shows up all over the island. I'm eager to chat with her about her rowing background and the nonprofit she founded in 2013 called the Seize the Oar Foundation, and also one of her newest gigs, which is working with the Hustle Up group, of a group of solo entrepreneurs, which she is a fantastic one. So we have a lot to cover today, Tara. And I'd love to start with a little bit of your backstory. I know recently you considered yourself a new islander. So how did you get to Vashon, and where does your story start?
Yeah, so I call myself class of 2018, which I've heard some newcomers say what year you arrived is your class. So you're class of 2018. So I'm class of 2018. You know, I arrived in Seattle in 1994. I drove out here the day after I graduated from college in upstate New York because I had been here doing some internships during my junior year. And at the time in 94, if you kind of rewind back, that was the year Nirvana's album came out, Smells Like Teen Spirit. That was the year the buzz started about grunge culture. And as a theater person at the time, there was actually a really big interest for me here in people's theater and fringe theater. So there was a big fringe theater movement happening in the Northwest. A lot of folks from Yale, for instance, Yale Theater, were moving out and creating these really avant-garde small theater groups. So I brought myself out and checked it out. So then when I graduated from college, I packed up the car, and the next day I drove straight across the country to Seattle, and I spent 25 years almost in that city.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where did you go to college?
Ithaca College in upstate New York.
So beautiful.
I have a business degree in arts, the business of arts, and that led me into a long career in Seattle of nonprofit management and fundraising. So I had a lot of years where I worked for Pilchuck Glass School, for Progressive Animal Welfare Society, and then I ended my fundraising career really on, I thought, a really high note with Seattle International Film Festival. I was there for 5 years.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Managing, I managed the whole individual giving program there and kind of reshaped it. And it was just really, I'm really proud of what I did there. And it was a great job and a great culture of film and film festivals. And I love film. I've been a short film producer and short film maker and creator, and just love all that kind of media and working with audiences and working with donors.
And so in those roles, clearly you've interacted with many thousands of people over your career.
Right.
Were you an extrovert as a child?
Oh, yeah. I think I was always willing to talk to anybody. You know, my dad really preached the gospel of empathy and the gospel of common sense. And so and common courtesy, that's what he would call it. Mm. At the time, those lectures weren't really fun to hear, you know, when you're like 8 years old and he's pulling you out of a dinner situation and telling me about common courtesy. But I think the message was just kind of always have your head on a swivel and always have your head kind of looking around at who's around you. And then later in life, you know, I've been a competitive rower for a long time, and I had a great coach who would tell me, who would tell us as a team, everybody has a wake. So be aware of your wake, whether it's literal wake and when you're driving your launch boat as a coach and you wake out somebody and you cause these huge waves and there's, you know, chaos, to your just personal wake. So I think those relationship type of jobs and those relationship type of situations I've always thrived in, because I love watching how all those dynamics work.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
And growing up, obviously, you had the creative theater interests and music interest, but was hair or anything that looks like what you do right now part of your childhood?
You know, it's interesting now, the hindsight, doing kids' hair. I do a lot of kids on the island with the new barbershop down at Country Store, you know, that plus the mobile plus the pop-up stuff. I started out doing kids and seniors, you know, when I started my business. And looking back, when I see a kid come in and they get a haircut that they choose, that they come up with, and the feeling and the look that happens on their face when they have a haircut that they feel really expresses themselves in that moment in their life, it's a powerful moment. And so it took me back, you know, when I was 3 years old, my mom wanted nothing more than the fluffy pink dress and the pigtail, you know, the ponytails and all this kind of thing. But fortunately for me, my brother cut one of those pigtails off when I was three.
Oops.
And but you know, so it required an emergency trip to Ken the barber, who I have very fond memories of Ken the barber. He'd put you up on the little the barber chair, but there was like a thing you would sit on top of if you were little,
like a booster seat,
booster. And so he gave me my first short haircut. And I think probably within minutes, I realized how differently I was going to get treated as a short haired child because I was immediately thought to be male, you know, and a tomboy or powerful. It seemed more powerful. So I had short hair most of my life. Mm. So I've gone through a lot of hairstyles in that quest for expression, whoever you are at that moment. So I think for me, I've always been aware of hair's power in that way. And then for some reason at Lilith Fair, do you remember Lilith Fair? Oh my God. How old are you?
I'm 37.
Okay. So Lilith Fair was the big Sarah McLachlan tour.
I did love Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah. So there was a whole, it was one of the first revolutionary all female tours. And they came to the Gorge. And for some reason, I decided to set up in the little second village. I was probably 24 years old. I decided to set up in the little second village with a pair of scissors and a set of clippers. I don't know why. I mean, that was literally like 30 years ago. And I'm like, what was I thinking with my friend? We were just going to cut people's hair. You know, when people go to festivals, they do all sorts of wacky stuff. Oh, yeah. They get their head shaved and all sorts of fun things. But with the haircutting now, it really just started because my older neighbor asked me to give her hair a trim during lockdown because she just was feeling really shaggy, and it just kind of went from there, you know. And I cut her hair, and it didn't go great, of course, because I didn't know what I was doing, but it wasn't terrible. And then somebody else, word got out, and then I ended up going to barber school during COVID, during lockdown. So that's how we got started.
Wow.
But yeah, so the hair thing has always been sort of a pivot point of expression. Okay. And I see that now where I get to be part of that conversation now, but for other kids and for grown-ups as well. You know, I have clients who are transitioning or going through transition or in some sort of transition of life, whether it's gender identity or it's marriage or moving or changing jobs or whatever. And the hair is the thing.
Yes.
You know, or they're getting ready for prom, or this weekend is back to school. So, yeah.
Yeah. And because of that, do you feel the weight of a haircut? Do you ever get a little nervous to give a haircut?
I do when I do when someone says to me, I don't know, do whatever you think is the best. I think that's a little bit, that's tricky territory. You know, so I'm always very conservative when that happens. I don't take very much off. I'm like, you know, or we just have a long consultation. We talk a long time about their face shape and like their reality of their life. Do they like to tuck it behind their ears? Do they have a nervous tic where they chew on their hair, or they tuck it behind their ears, or they always put it up, or they always wear a headband, or, you know, like, let's talk about the reality of your hair.
Okay.
And it could be in terrible condition. It could be in great condition. It could be fried from being dyed and you can't do certain things to it. So I love being part of that process. But yeah, it is nerve-wracking sometimes when someone has a really high expectation or what they tell me they want doesn't match what they actually wanted. Like they look at it and they go,
not what I had in mind, but I couldn't express what I had in my mind or something
like that. Right. So pictures help, you know, a lot of people bring pictures, but then you have to be like, well, that person has like 50 pounds of hairspray in their hair and, you know,
special lighting
and their hair is like blonde and yours is, you know, black, you know, whatever. So you sort of have to help people. You have to help steer people a little bit. And, you know, as a new barber, I don't know everything and I don't know all the answers, but it's fun to talk about it and kind of explore it and be like, well, what if we did this? What if we did this in a multi-phase approach? You know, like, let's go to this. That seems really drastic today. Let's do like the halfway point today or, you know.
So. Yeah.
But I've had to learn that. I mean, consult is consult is the most important part of the whole experience for someone. So they feel heard.
Yeah, totally. You know? And is your dad still around? Has he been able to watch your new career?
No, the whole project is an homage to him. His name was Mickey, and he died about 7 years ago, 7.5 years ago now. He was a dapper dude. He always combed his hair the same way. He had beautiful silver fox, full head of hair. They called him the silver fox. And, you know, during the process of building the barbershop, my mom actually sent me his tool belt. And he was a tinkerer guy. He would tinker and make things and engineer things. And I've always wondered sort of where I got that. I could do that. I could just be like, look at that and like, oh, let's fix it this way or let's do that. And here I'm handed this empty old mechanics truck and the opportunity to make it into a barbershop. And she sent me the tool belt and I felt like I was super empowered by that. And he had some part of that process genetically, maybe just being his child. And he was my sweetheart. So I really, at the end, when I finally kind of came around to, someone said, did you name the truck? You know, you name cars.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I didn't. And so I named it Mickey after him. Aww. And there's his portrait is in the truck. One of my favorite pictures of him with awesome hair. Not the silver fox hair, but he's 1968 hair with his big swoop. Looks gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a big bright smile.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, he would have loved this. Like, he would have thought this was the thing. He had the same barber, hair cutter for more than 20 years. Donna in Tennessee.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's very aligned with kind of his ethos, and I'm sure he'd get a total kick out of it.
Oh, he absolutely would. I'm excited to show the shop to my mom. She's coming in September of this year, and I'm excited to show it to her because, you know, it's taken me a long time to find this thing, find this path, and I've been a hustler most of my career, done a lot of different jobs, did, you know, fundraising professionally, but I was always doing three other jobs and three other things alongside it because I liked doing a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because I needed to, but just because I liked doing a lot of different things. But this is kind of the thing, you know, you kind of land on this runway and you're like, oh.
This feels good. Yeah.
This is great.
Yay.
I love going to work every day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so you spend some time or a lot of time in Seattle. Was that mostly downtown, like really heart of Seattle living?
No, I was a South End girl. I started in the Central District, moved out to Leschi Mount Baker neighborhood, which is on Lake Washington, in view of Lake Washington. So I lived in this great little cottage with a view of Mercer Island, Mount Rainier, and the lake. It was absolutely beautiful. Great spot for Blue Angels. We were right in the heart of the Blue Angels right there, and the Hydros. And I was in that house for over 12 years.
Okay.
So very invested in that area. But I worked on Lake Washington. So I worked at the Mount Baker Rowing and Sailing Center, which is my connection to rowing. Because I started rowing when I was 13 and came back to it as an adult and then started coaching in 2010. In addition to rowing. So I was, you know, full on at the boathouse down there in the Seward Park neighborhood 6 days a week.
Oh, wow.
Either rowing or coaching, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And rowing at 13, was that back in Tennessee?
Yeah. Oak Ridge, Tennessee is a kind of an unusual spot. Oak Ridge is one of the sites of the Manhattan Project, like Los Alamos and Hanford here in Washington.
Okay.
Yeah. So Oak Ridge was a secret project. It was a behind the fence, very secret. Even the people in the surrounding area had no idea what was happening, but they had taken over acres and acres, thousands and thousands of acres, and built these huge plants in the middle of farmland in Tennessee. And so this huge influx came in the 40s during the war of scientists, physicists. At one point, it was the highest number of physicists in any one location in the world.
Huh.
And they were building, they were splitting the uranium to build the atomic bomb in this particular location. So there was three huge plants, and there's the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. So it's a lot of, it's kind of an unusual southern town where it's a little bit bipolar in the way that you have these like PhD physicists from India, China, and, you know, MIT and all this stuff with, you know, your typical southern local multi-generation families. So my parents are part of that scientific community, and they were both scientists. My mother with biology and my dad with biology as well, but ended up selling Geiger counters or radiation detectors all over the world.
Funny enough.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Yeah, so he was a salesman. And but Oak Ridge, because of that, those Ivy League folks took one look at this one particular stretch of waterway. And if you're a rower, you would know that's 2,000 meters or more of seven lanes across to make a perfect race course.
Oh, wow.
And a guy saw that, and he said, let's build a rowing club. So when you were 13, it just seemed like the thing to do. You went down to the rowing club, and you took rowing. And I did it for a couple of seasons, but I was a volleyball player. I loved volleyball and basketball and softball. I played softball since the time I was five. I always say the greatest gift my dad ever gave me, back to my dad, greatest gift my dad ever gave me, greatest gift I've ever received, actually, is the ability to throw a ball well.
Okay.
I love that. And I'm looking forward to next year. Actually, I'm going to sponsor a t-ball team here on Vashon Island. Come on, Barbara, t-ball team.
Oh, cute. Can't
wait. I literally feel like my entire professional career has led to this moment. Like,
this is the pinnacle.
This is the pinnacle of my professional career. Aww. To have my own t-ball team. But I was always very athletic and doing a lot of that kind of thing. So crew came in for a couple of years, and then I came back to it as an adult. And I row for Vashon Crew here, Vashon Rowing Club here, and coach for Vashon Rowing Club as well, because I live down in Burton by the boathouse.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've never done crew. It was very popular where I grew up, but I feel like there's something just, especially on Vashon, but something about the Pacific Northwest and the amazing views. It's like calling me just to be on the water, you know.
Let's do it. So I'll teach you.
That'd be sweet. That's yeah. It's amazing to watch people out there in the early morning with like the fog rising from the water. Yeah. Pretty cool.
It's a great sport. It is the best sport.
Okay, yeah. And I mean, it's probably a natural time to ask you about the Seize the Ore Foundation. The story behind that? It was in my research of you that I popped up on that organization. It looks pretty incredible.
Yeah. So back in 2013, I was coaching at the Mount Baker Rowing Center, which is a parks department facility for Seattle Parks. And my boss at the time, who actually has now retired from that, but lives here on Vashon, oddly enough, she got an email from a guy who said, I'm a spinal cord injury survivor, and I'd like to learn to row. My wife wants to buy me rowing lessons for my birthday. Is anyone there comfortable with doing that? I see you offer private lessons. And for some reason, Peg forwarded that email to me. I was a learn to row coach at the time. I, of course, did private lessons for people, but I had no idea about what was going to come through the door when I wrote back to this person, Aaron, and said, basically, sure, why not? Let's try it. Which has sort of been my professional like motto. My whole career motto has been like, sure,
why not?
I'll cut your hair. Sure. I'll teach you how to row, even though I have no idea about spinal cord injuries or about traumatic injury or about all of that. But I was also a personal trainer, so I had a lot of knowledge in terms of body mechanics and all of that. But still, each body is so different. So Aaron showed up at the boathouse, and we took off on this journey together. And I really lucked out with him, because he ended up, I was like, oh, what do you do for work? And he's like, oh, I'm actually a physical medicine and rehabilitation attending physician at Harborview Trauma Center.
Jeez.
I was like, oh, then you might know a few things about traumatic injury or, you know, adaptive sport or something. So I was on a fast track to learn about adaptive sport and learn about how to adapt rowing and who was already doing that. So think about the Paralympics, right? There's para rowing. They call it para rowing in the Olympics. Down here on the sort of domestic everyday people level, it's just called adaptive rowing. And so what we do is we basically, I consider adaptive rowing to mean rowing for anyone who needs adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, we at Seize the Oar Foundation was founded out of that concept. And so what we do is we champion inclusion in the sport of rowing.
Mm.
Just as sounds like a general concept, but rowing is actually very exclusive. It's known to be very kind of preppy and elite on the financial and sort of geographic level. Like it's usually on the outskirts of the country, Boston, you know, in Rhode Island, you know, you think of it as, you know, or Cal and Stanford. If you're in the rowing world, you sort of think of it on the edges, you know, where there's water, of course, right? But the reality is it has a lot of potential for a lot of community building, a lot of team building, a lot of personal building. So the master's rower level and the junior rower level, as we've seen here on Vashon, is very successful. All over the world are master's rowers, which is basically 21 and up, people not on a national team track, basically. And so adaptive rowing has not really thrived in the normal everyday people kind of world until veterans pushed the issue. So veterans are really the genesis of most adaptive sport and adaptive recreation. If you look into the history of adaptive sport, for instance, in England or Australia or Canada, when those veterans came back injured from the various wars, there was life enrichment programs created for folks. Here in the U.S., it took a little bit longer to reach that point. It took, ADA didn't even pass until, I think it's been in the last 50 years, you know, the ADA has passed. So even opportunity, Title IX, ADA, all those kinds of opportunity in athletics and opportunity in recreation and sport, U.S. was a little bit late to the game, you know.
Surprise.
So adaptive sport has been a little bit slow, but some are thriving. Paranordic skiing is absolutely thriving. We've seen the Paralympics now has made it to NBC television. You know, now you can watch it just right alongside all the other Olympics.
Mm.
So Seize the Oar Foundation does three things. We do team training, which means we host a competitive team, bring in new rowers and novice rowers along, and we compete. We go to regattas, we compete right alongside non-adaptive rowers. And it's been a mission of Seize the Oar to really be as integrated as possible into the sort of standard of rowing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have come up with all kinds of ways of doing that, where we do stagger start racing with non-adaptive rowers, or we do. So we've come up with a lot of kind of fun ways to not make it look like, oh, there's the people who need adaptation over there.
It's totally separate. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Cause you don't want that aquarium effect.
Yeah.
Right. You really don't want the aquarium effect or the zoo effect of like, oh, you know, so we do team training and then we do outreach, which means we work with like a Special Olympics swim team or a Special Olympics ski team or a Northwest Blind Athletes Association. And we host 1 day rowing events. And what we do with that event is we teach other rowing coaches how to work with athletes who need adaptation. So we host it at a boathouse like Bellingham, the Whatcom Rowing, or we go to Green Lake in Seattle. And we invite their coaches to come on the launches with us. And we show them, here's how you would help a nonverbal autistic person or a blind person with Down syndrome or someone with limb difference. Here's how you would teach them to row. And meanwhile, the athletes are having a great time and they're learning to row right along with us.
Hmm.
So it's kind of got a two-way effort, because what we're trying to do is show the professional community of rowing in Seattle the opportunity is there. And it's not this big, scary thing that has to be over there. Like that's where the adaptive rowing goes, is over there. So we want it to be as integrated into the boathouses as possible. And to that end, the last thing we came up with in 10 years of doing this is we came up with our own coaching certification.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So I spent a lot of time. This is my baby, this coaching certification. So if people are interested in learning about adaptive sport, and it also teaches inclusion strategies of how to make your boathouse more inclusive and how to make boathouse culture. So it can apply across the board, you know, whether you're working in tennis or a social service or whatever, but the ideas and concepts of how to truly be inclusive and how to change the culture where you are to be inclusive. So if you're working in an organization that is like, oh, we could do better, you know, it's worth a look at things like this to do that. So that's been very successful. We have coaches who've graduated from the program from all over the world, and we wanted it to be a global program. And yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I present that certification at different conferences. So this is the first year since COVID lockdown, you know, that I'll be able to travel.
Oh, yay.
So I'll be presenting it in Atlanta in October. And meanwhile, I'm so grateful to have great folks in Seattle actually running the program. It's not a Vashon program. So we have tried to start a veterans program here for our veterans with indoor rowing, but it's been hard to get going. But still a possibility to do an adaptive rowing program here on land, which would be really fun.
So yeah.
It's out there and it's totally possible. But we're a really unique organization in that we focus completely on that topic, as well as just our vibe is really different than most rowing organizations.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun with what we do. So, you know, it's not so serious all the time.
Yeah. Well, you practice what you preach. And
yeah.
Nothing's more inclusive than fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of my other life, though. You know, it's been hard to keep that up after moving to Vashon.
I bet.
You know, so.
I bet. And how did Vashon come into the picture? You had a lot going on in Seattle.
I did. You know, I actually had a really strong tribe, community, whatever you want to call it, in Seattle after being there for years, you know, playing softball, being in the film community, being social. I had a relationship come to an end in 2017 after many, many, many years together, almost 20 years together. Mm-hmm. And it was the best thing we did. Like, we're best friends now. It was the best decision for us. She just got married a couple weeks ago. Yay, Karen Moffitt got married. I got to give a toast. It was awesome.
Nice.
So I ended a relationship in 2017, and I had really become very dissatisfied with Seattle. And I used to joke that Seattle was one letter away from settle. And, you know, I just didn't want to settle. And I knew whenever I traveled, I wanted to be on an island. I always traveled to islands, whether it was the Southern Gulf Islands in Canada on a solo bike tour or go to, I pick an island, you know, Lopez. I love Lopez Island. So I love island communities. I like sort of the containedness of it. You know, it's like all like contained. And so I was kind of looking around and thinking about what I was going to do next after that relationship. And, you know, I was managed to pack all my things into the back of a pickup truck. You know, it was really nice to downsize. And somehow Vashon came into my brain because I was always toe-to-toe at the regattas against the Vashon women.
Ah.
And I thought, okay, here's a small island community. It's known for being fairly liberal and having arts, and they have a competitive women's rowing program. Like, there's a good combination, because Bainbridge obviously was another option, because Bainbridge has rowing, has a good rowing community there and a new boathouse now. But I came over to Vashon and met with co-housing, because I was alone, so I thought, why don't I try and live in intentional housing community and find community that way. And went over there. And then within 2 weeks of just making the decision of being here, I had a full-time job on the island with benefits and a place to live. It was very serendipitous.
Wow. Yeah, I don't hear that often. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people tell me that story when they're sitting in the barber chair. Of course, every day I get asked multiple times a day, how did you get to Vashon?
Yeah.
I return the question. I hear a lot of different versions. There's a lot of West Seattle refugees here now. They've all moved from West Seattle.
My next door neighbors are some, yes.
Yeah. East Vashon, we like to call West Seattle. So I came to Vashon, and the job that I moved here for didn't work out right away, but I was just determined to stay. I didn't know anyone, and that's unusual for me. I usually know a lot of people already, or like I have some connection. So it really put me in a very reflective place. So I spent 2019 finding my way. So it was creating a radio show called New Kids on the Rock with a fellow newcomer, Adam Day. That was kind of a way to make friends and meet other newbies. And so the newbies, we all sort of hung together and would meet weekly and be like, well, what have you found out this week? What did you find out? Like, what secret handshake did you discover this week? And New Kids on the Rock came out of that. So I proposed that to Jeff Hoyt, who rows, is a rower, and he thought that was a great idea. So they trained me on how to do a show, and Jeff was our engineer. Yeah, so that's how Vashon came to be.
Yes, yeah. Wow. And sounds like you're thriving here and no regrets moving here.
I don't have any regrets moving here. I think it just took a little bit of reflection to realize what kind of a life I wanted to build, what kind of a life I wanted to design for myself. Mm-hmm. And that's really empowering when you can sit back and decide that, you know, and then make it happen and see if you can make it happen. I was really fortunate. I want to do a shout out to Paco, Tammy Brackaway Joyce's partner, Paco. I've told him this, that he was the first person in Thriftway to look me in the eye and smile at me when I moved to Vashon. And he's such a kind person. And when I've told people that story, they're like, oh, absolutely. Paco is totally the person who would do that. But I just remember his warmth. It made me feel like, oh, okay, this, we can do this. Yeah. So I would go into Thriftway and I literally didn't know anyone. Now it takes me an hour to get through Thriftway.
Now there's sometimes I'm, you know, yeah, you gotta go to worried about.
You got to go to IGA. Yeah, Island, what do we call it? Island Grocers Anonymous. Like if you don't want to talk to anybody, go to IGA.
It's a nice strategy.
Yeah, or wear a mask. You know? But yeah, I'm always grateful to people like Paco and people like Jeff Hoyt who really extended a hand. And that made me feel like maybe the Northwest wasn't such a terrible place because I hadn't experienced the Seattle freeze for sure. And where people don't even look at you on the street. And I'm not that person. I'm from the South. I'm like, I'll talk to anybody about anything, like the sunshine, your shoes, whatever it is. Like, let's just chat. I don't need to be your best friend. I don't need to date you. Like, we can just chat on the street. It's okay. I just want to tell people in Seattle that it's okay. And Vashon seemed really different. Vashon seemed like eye contact was the thing. You know, accountability that came with the eye contact was the thing. So it was really refreshing. You
yeah,
know?
I resonate with that. I am. Yeah, I lived in Seattle years ago for 1 year in Belltown, and I struggled, I think, with that Seattle freeze mentality. But here I've become so used to people acknowledging you. I have a dog, so there's the whole dog culture of fellow dog owners. And now I struggle when I go travel off of the island. I almost feel very uncomfortable walking by people on the street and not saying hello. Yeah. So I do, but people, you know, have their head, their earbuds in and they're looking down on the ground. And yeah, it's funny how easily I took to that part of the culture here.
Oh yeah. I'm so super chatty with bartenders in Seattle and they just look at me like, what are you doing?
What's your angle?
Like, what do you want from me? I'm like, it's okay. Now I know how, I remember how, what it was like to be come from the South and move to the Northwest and just be like, what is wrong with everyone? Like, why are they so, you know, it's okay. I get it. You know, it's rainy, it's cold, it's dark, you know, it carries over, I guess.
To people's moods sometimes.
Thankfully, yeah. Vashon is not that way. And there was a lot of people who opened doors and opened arms and made it happen.
Nice. And could you talk a little bit about what it's like to start a brand new business on an island? Because I feel like that might come with unique challenges and opportunities. But
yeah, I think you have to have absolute confidence in the vision of the business. Like you have to have absolute confidence and you have to really pay attention to how people are receiving you. And really be open to feedback. I mean, I got a lot of feedback when I was a mobile barber about my booking system or about how people would tell me all the time, this is great because I don't have to pack up my kids and get on a ferry and take them over town. And it's financially and emotionally stressful for everyone. I'm so grateful you're doing this. Every single house I would go to, what a great business model. What a great business model. You should do this. What a great business model. Like they basically developed the business for me, right? I just felt like I was on a ride that I paid for and I got on the ride. And then all these people kept joining me on the ride, right? And they were like, okay, we're going to go this way and this way and this way. And then just intuitively, I have a great team that helped me make a great brand. You know, I have Johnny Stiff who made my logo and the logo is phenomenal. It was actually his first draft of the logo, in the first drafts of the logo. And I love it so, so, so much. The Get Spiffy, Stay Classy tagline was a joke that I love the word spiffy. I think it's not used enough in the world. And then Get Classy was actually a way that my friends and I would sign off. We'd be like, all right, stay foxy or stay classy. Or, you know, it's just some version of that. So I don't know why, but someday I just thought of like, Get Spiffy, Stay Classy. I mean, it's just, that's how it happens. It just comes to you in some way, you know, you're just like, what do they call that? Just like the flow through, you know?
Yeah.
And then just how to build a kit, and just endless YouTube videos and endless articles about what goes in a barber kit if you're a mobile barber. And, oh, okay, need that, need that, need that, need that. What I always got overwhelmed with was there are so many different kinds of shears. There are so many different kinds of combs. There are so many different options for how do you know that that comb is the one that's going to be the best for you ergonomically, for your clients, whatever. It is so much. It's just, and like any business, has gadgets, has 15,000 purveyors of gear, you know. But I got some good advice at barber school, and that was, you know, it's like in terms of what YouTube videos to watch for tutorials, just as for fun on the side, you know, I'm always studying. They're like, only watch videos made by manufacturers. So like L'Oreal, Wahl, who makes clippers, Babyliss, who makes clippers, only watch the videos made by those people. They are selling you a product, but they pay those people a lot of money to make those videos. So it's not like Joe in his garage showing you how to do a fade, right? Yeah. So Joe in his garage showing you how to do a fade is a good comparison study. So I felt a compromise there, but the business really grew because of the feedback I was getting from people and what they were telling me they loved and what they were telling me they thought should be different. And then I got handed a really great opportunity because I wanted to expand the business to include facial grooming with beards and mustache and skincare, that kind of thing. I'm not an esthetician. I'm not registered or licensed as an esthetician, but I am licensed as a barber. And no one on the island was doing a lot of kids. So I really focused on doing a lot of kids. No one on the island, or very few people on the island were doing seniors. I really didn't see a lot of people advertising. So I was like, okay, let's hit the kid market hard, right? With kids come parents, with parents come grandparents, with that come neighbors, you know? So it's sort of, you start with the kids and you get a whole sort of group that comes with that, which is really fun. And then kids are walking billboards, right? They're all at school. They're like, who did your hair? Who did your hair? You know? And they're like, this lady came to my house. You know? So cute. And there's little ones that, you know, I do first haircuts, I do last haircuts, sadly. You know, sometimes I've done at least four last haircuts. And you're just part of these people's lives all the time. So I got an opportunity to expand the business to facial grooming with the purchase of this 1986 step van, this old Airborne Express truck that was for sale on the island. My friend Denise gave me the heads up that it was for sale, and I bought it within 24 hours. I bought it.
Wow.
And it was disgusting. It was used as a mechanic's van, but I don't know why, but I saw a barbershop in there and I spent 10 months building it.
And was it just sitting in the back of your house?
I actually rented a spot up on Wax Orchard from a friend who had a lot of property, and I plugged into the power there, and there was a hose and I could use water there. And I had no idea what I was doing, but you know, I saw a few pieces of inspiration in terms of decor, and looked at a lot of barbershops online, and looked at a lot of like, oh, what do they have there? Like, what's that device? Like, how do they do their wiring? How do they do their lighting? What's good lighting in a barbershop? Who knew? I don't know. You know, so I did a lot of research. And then I had some great help with plumbing and electrical. People always ask me, and they always say like, oh, you have so much going on. What don't you do? The answer, plumbing and electrical. I don't do plumbing and electrical.
Leave that to the professionals.
Yeah, so I had some great help with plumbing and electrical from Jordan Saltman, who built out his own high roof van life van. So he knew how to do small space plumbing and electrical. And then some Finnish carpentry from Ryder Stevenson, who is a Finnish carpenter on the island. He built my cabinet for my counter, my sink.
Very cool.
And then Jan-Erik Schaefer, who's a painter and artist on the island, but also a construction guy. He helped cut my beautiful countertop, which was an old high school science lab counter.
Ooh.
It's very cool. And then just various friends and family, you know, kind of helping out with cleaning and staining and cutting and moral support and being out there in the cold, dark, rainy winter nights working on the truck. And how do you paint the side of a truck? Thanks to Orca Eats, they had painted their truck. So they gave me some guidance on painting. And, you know, how do you get a 6-foot decal, you know, to, and how do you put it on? Like, thanks to Margo for her precision, her attention and precision for putting on the logo, you know, on the side of the truck. So it's really been a community effort. And
yeah.
Then it launched June 12th of 2022, at grand opening. It's been open ever since. So I'm there 4 days a week and I do mobile kind of 1.5 other days of the week.
Okay. And for the mobile, are you using the truck now instead of the bike?
Okay. No, I use the electric bike.
Cool.
As you saw on the Evening Magazine piece.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, it's been hard to use the bike because it's been really hot.
Yeah.
And then it's been just really weird weather. So, and then also you have to manage your geography. Like sometimes they'll be like way up and way down in Tahlequah, and then the next one's like in, you know, West Side Highway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's really hard to get to. So I've been using my personal car a little bit more this summer, but people still like the mobile.
Yeah.
You know, it's great for work from home. It's great for seniors, great for little kids,
mm-hmm.
great for moms who, or whoever's a stay-at-home parent who just need a break and get their hair cut. You know,
yeah, it's a beautiful model. Yeah, very community-focused. And yeah, it's definitely, you hit a need.
Yeah, and you know, I started a lot of my promo doing pop-ups. So I would do a pop-up barbershop at Country Store last summer. I would do pop-up barbershops for kids, and I would keep it for kids. And just pop my tent, put my chair up, and I just practiced cutting hair on every single kind of kid, you know, whether they were a screamer, squiggler, wiggler, whether they were stoic, you know, like kids love to like basically like fold up, you know, when they get their hair cut, they love to just like fold. And I'm like, that's okay. You know, I can work around that. Yeah.
You've seen it all now.
Yeah. So doing the pop-ups around at Country Store here at Island Queen and at Eggie's Winterfest last year.
Mm.
And then Back to School Fest with Island Queen and Halloween, Strawberry Festival, did Strawberry Festival this year. I did drive the truck up for Strawberry Festival because I was kind of the showcase piece. But usually I just travel with my tent and my director's chair and a box, and I just put my business cards out, and super simple. It doesn't need to be fancy. I'm lucky now that I figured out that Island Lumber does large format printing. And it's on waterproof paper.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hot tip. I learned that from Aaron at Wabash on Adventures. Thank you so much, Aaron. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
So I can put up signage and just all these little tips. Everybody made it possible.
It took a village.
A village, literally.
And it's allowed you to tap into this whole new community of fellow entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So could you talk a little bit about this Hustle Up group that you're a part of?
Yeah. So Hustle Up, shout out to all the Hustle Up folks. Hustle Up came out of a conversation with a couple of other solopreneurs. So Vashon Coffee Dust is part of it. Luna Bella, Shino's Promo, Little Bird Nursery, M. Tantau Studios, Kate Endel Illustration, Wild Dreams Farm. And everybody's just a badass. Like, they are solopreneurs. We're teaching each other resources and like what kind of resources they're using. Like, who does your books? Who does your printing? Who does your swag? Who, how do you do your books? Do we need to do like a little webinar for ourselves on, you know, let's go in together and we'll hire somebody to consult with us, whatever we're talking about. And also just sort of moral support for being a solopreneur and keeping the grind going, because we're all working 7 days a week, you know, 24 hours a day. Essentially, you wake up and it's your business, go to sleep, it's your business. How do we balance that? So we get together for food and company and, you know, we've talked about, oh, what's your elevator pitch? If you ever had to pitch deck, would you do a pitch deck to do investors? Like, why don't you do investors? So we've had lots of interesting business conversations. And we wanted to support each other. So it still goes on, you know, it's a great group.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I feel like it can be a lonely venture when you're out doing it yourself. So to find community like that must be pretty powerful.
Yeah, it can be really lonely, especially if you're in a really niche thing and you're the only one doing it. So like Luna Bella is one of two consignment shops, and Wild Dreams Farm is in community with other farmers, but Vashon Coffee Dust is like coffee dust, you know. Their community is the farmer's market, you know. So, I mean, that's where they sell it a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting how we've all sort of aligned ourselves with different communities. But and some people do this kind of thing with the chamber, you know, here on Vashon, and some people just kind of stay to themselves. But we really felt like it was powerful to meet as solopreneurs, you know, and just really hammer out what that was like. You know, we're not getting big funding from the feds. We're not getting investor income, you know, at least not me, you know. Hell no, if anybody would like to invest, then come on, Barbara.
Awesome. Well, so what's sort of on the horizon for you? Like, what's really inspiring you these days? Anything we didn't talk about? I know the T-ball team is coming up.
Yeah, I can't wait for the T-ball team. I'm actually really interested in doing or sponsoring or hosting a career day on Vashon, because a lot of my clients are doing really cool jobs. Like I just had someone in the other day works for Elon Musk, like directly. I had someone in yesterday who is a firefighter in West Seattle. I had the chief of fire, the new police or the new fire chief in got a haircut. I have people who do, you know, your regular IT kind of tech software development stuff, but people who are artists. I had Morgan Brigg in yesterday, who's a sculptor artist. And I would love to have all of my kids meet these folks, right? And I'd love to like gather up everybody and do some sort of like thing. I don't know what it is, but there's something there of, I have a kid come in and I say, well, you know, do you think about what you want to be when you grow up? And they're like, I think I want to be a pilot, or I think I want to be a museum curator. And I'm like, I have a museum curator. His name is Paul. Can I introduce you to Paul? Or you want to go to aviation? You want to go into aviation? I know three people who are clients who are pilots. Do you want to meet them? Like, how do I make that happen? I can't do that for free or make that work. You know, like I'm not do it for free, but like, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, to just make to do those it on connections. Your own, yeah.
So what if I just put them all in the same place, or created some sort of like career bank, or, you know, I don't know. There's something there.
Like career show and tell type of thing.
Yeah, I just love that. You like come in and have career day. But maybe that's something I'll do with Island Queen, you know, because they have, we like to do all the kids stuff together with Bubblegum Pop-Up Shop and Vashon Reads. But on the horizon, I'd like to expand in the barbershop. I just started offering premium shaves. So that's a big addition to the business, to do hot towel, straight razor shaves. So great, great holiday gift for your person.
Very cool.
And then I'm thinking about what's next. So I'm joining a cohort to talk about scaling, a cohort in Seattle as part of the Small Business Administration. So I'm joining a kind of, you've been in business for a few years, you've made some good strides. What's next? Kind of cohort. So I'm joining that cohort, starts in September. And then I'm headed to the Charles to race the Charles with a group of people from queer and trans ally, first ever mixed eight that's going to race the Charles.
Yay.
So that's going to be really fun. That'll be in October. But next spring, look out for Come On T-Ball.
Okay.
It'll be so great.
Yes. I can't wait to see all the photos. Yeah.
I'm so excited. I really want the like little team photo in my shop, you know, little t-shirts.
Oh my gosh. So I can't. Cute. Little baseball cards.
Little tiny cards. Little hats. So cute.
Options are endless.
Yeah. Well, so I think that's about it. I mean, it's a lot, but it's like, it's going really well. I'm hoping that the business just sort of stays on a pretty consistent, note through the winter. I'm used to working seasonally, and I'm assuming that everybody needs their haircut all year long. So
last I checked people might be a little bit more laid back, but laid back. Well, Tara, as I believe you know, we like to end every show with a little lightning round of questions. Would you be game for that?
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's do it.
All right. So the Seattle area is known for good beverages, coffee, tea, beer, wine. Do you have a favorite beverage here on Vashon?
I have done an extensive research onto the spicy chai with oat milk. Okay. I'm a chai fanatic. I love chai. I would rank them, Lunabella being number one, Snapdragon being number two, and Anurana being number three.
Ooh, okay.
So Anurana is a Nepalese style chai. Snapdragon is homemade, absolutely 100% homemade. Lunabella is homemade also, but a little bit on the sweeter side.
Okay, I've never tried.
In that order.
Lunabella's. Okay, I'll take a tour of that. I love chai too. Now, if you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island?
I'm really fortunate to have a great couple of trees with a hammock.
Oh, nice.
So I love hammock. I love hammock camping and bike camping with hammocks. So I've done that trip a few times up to the Southern Gulf Islands. So I try to recreate that at home. Otherwise, I have paddle boards and, you know, being out on the water rowing and all that.
Very cool. And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
You know, I admit there's been times when I've done a ferry sprint.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Where you're just absolutely 100% inconsiderate. You're like, I must make this boat, right? I don't like being on the receiving end of a ferry sprint.
Mm.
And I decided early on that if you're tailing me anywhere on the island, I'm just going to pull over.
Mm.
I always pull over.
Mm.
And I really sort of relish when someone does that to me. I like, okay, all right, I need to check myself. Thank you so much. Especially when you live in Burton, like when you come up the hill out of Burton, you can hit the gas a little too hard. It's just easy. You just kind of ramp up out of Burton.
Yep.
But I've gotten people pull over in front of me coming out of Burton. Cause I also drive a gigantic pickup truck. That's actually very intimidating looking. But tailing is one of them. I would say not too much else. I think not too much else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
You know, nothing is more quintessential small town to me than summer concerts in the park.
Mm.
Even with the kids screaming and yelling and running in 50 different directions, which I know annoys the crap out of a lot of people, but just that walking around, seeing people, good music, how live music sounds in the open air. That's great. My second one would be Stupid Bike Night, which is coming up.
Ooh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, first Friday in September. Stupid Bike Night is pretty spectacular.
Okay.
I still haven't gotten it together to actually participate, even though I have an electric bike, like that I've kind of known for. Like, I
should. No excuses.
I know, right?
Those are good ones. And lastly, where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Yeah. So if you're interested in Seize the Oar, Seize the Oar has its own Instagram handle and it has a website, seizetheoar.org.
Okay.
If you're interested in learning more about adaptive rowing and or inclusive coaching strategies, that's a good place to go. If you are interested in Come On Barber, I'm trying to be really, really super active on Instagram. That's kind of my favorite right now. Mm-hmm. I just create a lot of reels and create a lot of content there. And it's come_on_barber because Come On Barber was already taken, but come_on_barber on Instagram. You can also find it comeonbarber.com and it's comeonbarber. It's not all spelled out. And yeah, so I have a website and a whole online booking system and you can come see the truck over at Country Store. So come on over to Country Store and Farm.
Yay.
And the truck is open Thursday through Sunday.
Awesome. Thank you. And I will include all links to all of those in the show notes if you're listening to this online.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much
for
coming in, Tara. This has been a real treat. Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been awesome. I'm a huge fan of your show and I was so just honored to be asked to be on. So thank you.
Oh, this has been a pleasure. And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH LP Vashon, your island connection, streaming online at voiceofvashon.org. Until next time, stay inspired.